most recent book is Warnings, Finding Cassandras to Prevent Catastrophes. And he is the host of the new podcast, Future State.
Hi, this is Rodney Greenblatt from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC, ACRA, 90.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Ian MacArthur. I'm based in Sydney.
I'm Annie Morad, and I'm in the UK, lurking. What do? We cause mischief and chaos in sound.
We use Skype as another musician, almost. And we haven't got a scooby of an idea about what this other musician might do to us.
Tune in to Itinerant Mind with Morad and MacArthur, the third Saturday of every month, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC Record Fair After Party. WGXC Record Fair After Party is at 5 p.m. at the Half Moon in Hudson, Sunday, September 16th. After the WGXC Record Fair all day, Sunday, September 16th at Basilica Hudson, the WGXC Record Fair After Party is at 5
p.m. Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network in sports.
You've tuned in to WGXC's local news show for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. Altogether Now covers the postcard show at the Hudson Area Library today. We'll also hear a new poem from Tony Fallon, our Irish DJ. The latest on the primary election campaign between Governor Andrew Cuomo and Cynthia Nixon, that's this Thursday. And we'll also hear from a local peace protester on September 11th. The local news and more on Altogether Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network on air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection, and the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, September the 11th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford.
Mandatory evacuations ordered as Cat 4 Hurricane Florence appears headed towards the Carolinas. Also on the Tuesday rundown, Nevada lawmakers join opposition to Ruby Mountain drilling, and the Oregon Innocence Project frees a man with a 50-year sentence. Topping our news, South Carolina's Governor Henry McMaster ordered evacuations along the state's 187-mile coastline starting at noon on Tuesday, saying residents must get out of Hurricane Florence's potentially devastating path. The Charleston Post Courier reports the evacuations cover some inland areas as well that are prone to flooding. They include Berkeley County and parts of Dorchester County. The Weather Channel reports Florence remains a Category 4 hurricane, likely to lash the East Coast later this week with life-threatening storm surge, destructive winds, and massive inland rainfall flooding. More Nevada lawmakers voicing opposition to plans to allow oil and gas leasing in the Ruby Mountains. More on the story from Catherine Davis Young.
For months, dozens of environmental organizations, Native American tribes, and sporting groups have been speaking out against the U.S. Forest Service proposal to open parts of the Rubies to drilling and fracking. Now, the Nevada legislature's Interim Public Lands Committee will send a letter formally opposing the leases. The move comes after a 5-4 vote last week. But the fight to protect the Ruby Mountains is not over, says Patrick Donnelly with the Center for Biological Diversity.
This is certainly not the end of it, but I think this adds to this overwhelming chorus of opposition that has come out of every corner of Nevada and around the West for oil and gas in the Rubies.
The letter will go to the secretaries of the Department of the Interior and Department of Agriculture, as well as Governor Brian Sandoval. The U.S. Forest Service last year introduced the plan to open 54,000 acres of the northeastern Nevada mountain range to oil and gas development. Over two public comment periods, the Forest Service received thousands of letters of opposition from the public.
If approved for leasing, several more steps in the Forest Service approval process would be required. No leases have been scheduled yet. An Oregon man is freed from a 50-year prison sentence thanks to the work of the Oregon Innocence Project. Eric Tegenhoff reports it's the project's first exoneration since it began 4 years ago.
Deschutes County District Attorney John Hummel dismissed the case against Redmond resident Josh Horner, who had been charged with sexually abusing his daughter, after discrepancies in the alleged victim's testimony were found. Steve Wax with Oregon Innocence Project says sexual abuse cases are emotion-laden and it's hard to believe that a child might make something up. But he adds that abuse cases rarely include forensic evidence or eyewitnesses, making the investigation into them integral.
It's necessary for there to be a thorough and searching and proper investigation, and that on occasion mistakes are made, and on occasion the allegation is not going to be founded, and how difficult it is to sort out the truth of the matter.
One key discrepancy in the testimony was the claim that Horner had shot his dog in front of his daughter. Oregon Innocence Project has found that dog is still alive. Horner spent about 16 months in prison before an appeals court overturned his conviction this summer. On Monday, a judge motioned to drop the case, meaning he won't face another trial. Wax commends Deschutes County DA John Hummel for his quick review of this case.
According to the National Registry of Exonerations, 18 Oregonians have been exonerated since 1989. Meantime, people who have spent time in Connecticut jails and prisons are asking for the state to invest in opportunities for all instead of incarceration.
The leaders of the ACLU's Smart Justice campaign know what having a criminal record does to the ability to function after serving time. They all have been affected directly by the state's criminal justice system. And according to Sandy LaMonaco, criminal justice organizer with the group, with a 2018 Department of Correction budget of more than $730 million, Connecticut has the third highest cost of incarceration per person in the nation.
We spend way too much money on a system that unnecessarily incarcerates too many people, is not designed to truly address trauma or rehabilitate people, and doesn't have the capacity to truly treat mental health and addiction.
Smart Justice will be attending Tuesday's gubernatorial candidates debate to raise the issue of criminal justice reform. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Finally, Ross Brown tells us farmers learn fast that there's no substitute for experience. That's why many Iowa farmers are getting help from elders in the business who are willing to share their knowledge.
Bart Verellen became a farmer midlife and joined a 2-year support and matching funds program offered by Practical Farmers of Iowa, designed to help beginning farmers succeed. Verellen says the mentorship program allowed him to work with experienced farmers who know the ropes, attend a range of learning events, network with peers, and develop a business plan.
Not only did we go through the process of thinking everything through and putting it down on paper, but we also had input from the program facilitators. And we also had financial professionals look at our business plan.
The savings incentive program launched by Practical Farmers in 2010 has served 138 beginning farmers.
The number of younger farmers has been decreasing since a 2007 Census of Agriculture report. The report showed there were about 387,000 farmers aged 44 and younger in 2007. That number has dropped by 43,000 in 2012, a drop of nearly 14%. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Tom Rowe with a WGXC News Update. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. William J. Kemble reports in the Daily Freeman that the Saugerties-Town Board is considering changes that could add dozens of businesses to the King's Highway corridor between Glasgow Turnpike and State Route 212. Quote, there's been a number of businesses over the last 2 years that have expressed an interest in wanting to come in and relocate in that area, but because of zoning restrictions, they just couldn't, unquote, Councilwoman Leanne Thornton said. The Saugerties Comprehensive Planning Committee recommended the changes, which would add 52 uses to the 19 already allowed in the industrial district and 25 uses to the 33 currently allowed in the office/light industrial district. Quote, the results of the revisions would be to allow retail, service, office, and similar uses in addition to customary industrial uses in those districts, unquote, the recommendation reads. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Campaign of Antonio Delgado, the Democrat challenging incumbent John Faso for the 19th congressional district in New York, claims his opponent is, quote, refusing to accept debates with two of the largest media outlets in our district, unquote. Delgado's campaign says public broadcasting station WMHT and Spectrum News are both attempting to organize televised debates between the two candidates, but Faso won't agree. Quote, Faso will only debate on his own terms, just like he will only hold town halls in his own terms. He forgets that the job is not about him, it's about the people, unquote, said Delgado. Quote, this is yet another cynical dodge from an absentee congressman who has repeatedly refused to address the issues that are critical to the people in our district. It's abundantly clear why he is avoiding talking about these issues because he can't explain why he voted in favor of gutting health care protections for people with pre-existing conditions, defunding Planned Parenthood after promising not to, and increasing out-of-pocket medical costs, unquote. Faso has not held any traditional town hall meetings during his term, only meeting with constituents in public under guarded conditions or at appearances that are not announced in public in advance. Chris McKenna reports at The Fray that Faso's campaign spokesperson, Joe Girard, says Faso will only debate if all the candidates are included. Quote, John feels strongly that the candidates who are on the ballot have the opportunity to participate, unquote, Girard said. Green Party candidate Steve Greenfield and independent Louisa Parker of Calicoon will also be on the ballot in November for the congressional seat. Faso and Delgado will be at two events that also include Greenfield, an Ulster Chamber of Commerce candidates forum on September 20th, and a WAMC radio debate on October 22nd. Faso and Delgado both did appear together at an August 29th candidate forum in Calicoon, sponsored by the New York League of Conservation Voters Education Fund, the Friends of the Upper Delaware River, and the Coalition for the Delaware River Watershed and the Delaware Highlands Conservancy. The forum focused on the environment but was not broadcast. Debbie Mayer in the Columbia paper rounds up all the information about the Thursday, September 13th primary election in New York. Polls are open from noon to 9 p.m. Thursday, not Tuesday this year, because, quote, they don't like to hold an election on 9/11, unquote, County Democratic Commissioner of Elections Virginia Martin said this week. Quote, this has happened before, unquote, she said. Quote, a few years ago, the primary was on September 13th, unquote. There are primary elections that day for Democratic Party and also the Green Independence and Women's Equality and Reform parties. Voters have to be enrolled in those parties to cast a ballot, except for the Reform Party, which allows anyone registered in a minor party not recognized in the state to vote the Reform line. Enrolled Republicans cannot vote for the Reform line, but voters registered for the Liberal, Libertarian, or Right to Life parties can. Democrats are running incumbent Governor Andrew Cuomo against actor and activist Cynthia Nixon in the main race. There's also a contest between Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul and Jumaine Williams, who is in his third four-year term on the New York City Council. Four Democrats are running for Attorney General: Sean Patrick Maloney, a Congress member from District 18 in the Hudson Valley; Letitia James, who is currently serving her second term as public advocate for the city of New York, Leisha Eve, a lawyer and vice president for government affairs for Verizon of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and Zephyr Teachout, a law professor and constitutional expert. Locally, two candidates are up for member of assembly in the 107th district, Tistra G. Hotling, who is town clerk of New Lebanon, and Don Boijian, a municipal and environmental attorney from near Troy. Registered Green Party members have an opportunity to ballot or write in for one candidate for member of assembly in the 107th Assembly District. On the Independence Party line, only those registered Independence Party members can vote for William G. Truitt as a member of the Dutchess County Legislature, who is challenging Dee Dee Barrett, who's seeking her fourth term in the state assembly. Independence voters can also write in two members of the party's county committee for Greenport District 2, and Edward F. Nabosny, the former Greenport supervisor, is running on the District 3 line. In the Women's Equality Party primary for member of assembly in the 106th district, Barrett is also on the ballot. The Reform Party primary includes three candidates for attorney general: Nancy B. Slilwa from Manhattan, Mike Dieterich from Stony Point, and Christopher B. Garvey from Amityville. Debbie Mayer reports that story in the Columbia paper. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC. Find out more in the newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts more rain on Tuesday, 60% chance, with cloudy skies and a high near 74. There are scattered showers in the forecast Tuesday night, again, mostly cloudy skies and a low around 61. Wednesday, there's just a 30% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 1 p.m. Otherwise, partly sunny with a high near 74 and a low around 63 Wednesday night. There's a 40% chance of rain on Thursday, mostly cloudy skies and a high near 76, low around 64. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, Creative Community Radio.
My name is Tony Fallon. Well, as you all know, or some of you do, I write poetry, and many of my listeners encourage me to read one that I've written, and I usually write one a day. Now, I don't write little poems like "The Cat on the, Had a Hat on the Mat," and that's it. They're usually pretty long. This one I wrote here a couple of days ago, and I've gotten absolutely great response from it. It's on Facebook, so people can read it. And it's a one called "Going Home." And what better for an immigrant to be writing about going home? And all of the Irish people have so many poems and songs about going home. So this is mine. If I had money to burden, I'd stay away from fire, and I'd probably go back to Ireland and retire. If I had that kind of money, I don't think I would wait to go over to Cork and buy Mike Flatley's fine estate. But I have enough saved to invest in a modest dwelling, and our house in Yonkers I am definitely selling. I was not happy leaving Ireland so many years ago, so I think I'd like to spend my days in Leitrim or Sligo. I'll bring along my loving wife, my lifelong mate. If I brought someone else, there would be a heated debate. If I would build a house, I'd have to make it cosy, with the fence to keep out dogs and people that were nosy. And we know with new construction, the total can go overboard, and prices that were quoted in estimates are often ignored. I'd probably settle for a house that's already built. If I rent another house, I'd feel a bit of guilt. We'd never get back that money we'd have to pay in rent, and the money could be used to make a pathway with cement. But if I buy an old house there, it cannot have a ghost, and it would have to be in a spot that overlooks the coast. It would face the Atlantic with a breeze every day, blowing across the ocean from New York and the USA. That's a place in America where for 40 years I toiled, and when I got home tired and hungry, my hands were often soiled. But the working man gets well paid and goes home content and proud. I wouldn't be talking about a new house in Leitrim if I had stayed home and ploughed. And that's my poem for this week. If you want to read my other poems, they're on Facebook. I post almost every day. I have a page on Facebook. And I thank you, Kathleen Murphy, the other night for telling all those people that I write some good poetry. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Here's Gary Sheffer from the Hudson Library talking about their postcard show that runs through October 31st. Dan Udell did a live web stream of this presentation at the Hudson Library on September 6th. Here's Gary Sheffer at the Hudson Library.
So I'm Gary Sheffer, and I chair the history really love this project for a lot of reasons. I like stories, and I really am drawn more to, other than the great artwork that you see on the front of the postcards, the stories behind them on the back of the cards is really what attracted me and to this project. And this is the one that we've used for our t-shirts and our promotion. You can see the date on this. Tomorrow night, this will be 111 years since this fella sent this postcard. I'm not sure who it was sent to. There's not any indication on the back of the card. But a street scene from my native town, right? So that's how people felt about Hudson then. That's how I feel about it. And I'm going to be, tell some stories here. As Brenda said, there was a lot of serious work that went into this exhibit. If you walk around and look at the research that went into each of these postcard categories, it was extensive, let me tell you. And Brenda thanked everyone who was involved. John and Greg was key to all of this, but there's other folks here that you see. So you probably didn't think you were coming to a talk tonight on archaeology, but that is the hobby. That is the collection, study, and preservation of picture postcards. And that website underneath Deltaeology is actually from the American Institute of Deltaeology, which is located in Pennsylvania. They have a museum. They have more than 1 million postcards there. And Deltaeology is a made-up word. There was a professor at the University of Maryland who was a postcard fanatic, and he made up the word Deltaeology. And now it's become quite popular. Just real some academic stuff and then the fun stuff. The real sort of golden era of picture postcards was the period that you see around the room here, really 1900 to 1910. An act of Congress authorized in 1898 that postcards could be printed privately. Until then, it was the U.S. Postal Service was the only one authorized to issue postcards. And it standardized the size that a message, where the message went, where the address went. And postcards were necessary because people were looking for an easy way to talk to their friends, to invite people over to dinner, to order things. You'll see here in a minute. David Murphy, my partner on this, David told me a fact the other day that I learned at this time, about 1900 to 1910, well, weren't there phones? And there were indeed 3 million phones in the United States in about this period. But the average income of a person was about $400 a month at the time, David, right? And the cost of a phone was exorbitant. People could not afford phones. So this, in many cases, was their phone, right? This was the way they communicated with each other through postcards. And another person who studied postcards said the most important things that people showed, particularly in the Hudson Valley, was the landscapes and how they changed over the years. That's the most important thing about postcards. Now, we don't have a lot of that. You'll see a lot of our postcards are from the same period. But the fact that postcards are an important historical item because they show how places changed over the years. We can see that mainly in our collection through the street scenes. The street scenes collection is over here, and we blew up some of them out in the hallway as well. And you can see, for example, I chose to blow up that postcard at Warren Street. There was a theater, the Rialto Theater, right about where it looks like the barbecue American Glory was. And I hadn't known that before, that there was a theater there at one point. So that's the importance, communicating with people and historic sort of contrast on what happened with places like Warren Street. So, I said there was a lot of serious things that went into this exhibit, which was the research, and it's really good. Collecting postcards is also a big item, even today. And you can see from this 1910 postcard, this was a Hudson collector, someone named G. Gifford, sending a postcard to someone in Lyons, New York, saying, if you really want to get a good collection of postcards, you got to join a club. right, and that this person has more than 2,200 postcards herself. The History Room collection, as Brenda, we've got about 400 postcards. We picked the best here to put on exhibit. They're being digitized, most from 1900 to 1910. Most focus on Hudson, but some show other Columbia County sites as well, and Stuyvesant Falls and that kind of thing. What you see here is all Hudson. Some are a mystery. We don't know what they depict. You know, they're postcards. We don't know what's left, so we'll digitize those and put them online, and we'll need your help. As Brenda said, we'd love to complete our collection. We know we don't have a fully complete collection of Hudson postcards, and so if you have any that you'd like to donate or you know where we can source them, please let us know. And these will be online next year.
Oh, honey, I'm so glad you brought me up to Hudson, New York, so we could gamble about with the Finches and the Sparrow families.
Yeah, honey, I love coming up here on the weekends. You know, Sunday, September 16th, over there at Basilica Hudson, they're having one of them record fairs.
Oh, I can finally get my Pete Townsend cassette.
Yeah, I'm going to get my Bette Midler bootlegs, probably, Sunday, September 16th at that Basilica Hudson.
Oh, is that that place with all the lovely people and sculptures and Greenway?
Yeah, they got a Greenway down there. I like to sit on it and stare at the frogs gathering around my feet.
Oh, September 16th at Basilica Hudson, the WGXC Record Fair.
Tune in special programming this week on WGXC Wednesday or late Tuesday, depending on your point of view, at midnight. Mr. Doug Doug, the current Wave Farm artist in resident, is live midnight on the radio. At 7 a.m. Wednesday on All Together Now, hear interviews with both candidates running for the 107th Assembly District in the Democratic primary on Thursday. On Wednesday, you'll hear Tistra Houtling and Don Boyajian, both interviewed during All Together Now. At 9 a.m., the WGXC Morning Show previews Yola Tenga's show in Kingston later that evening. 7:30 p.m., Dan Udell has an extra web stream of the Columbia County Board of Supervisors meeting, WGXC.org. Thursday, tune in at 7 a.m. for an interview with Jumaane Williams, who's running for lieutenant governor on Election Day. Voting starts at noon on Thursday and lasts till 9 p.m. Tune in at 9 a.m. Friday morning. WGXC's morning show brings you election results. 2 p.m. Friday on Hudson Valley Sound, tune in an interview with violinist Tim Fain, previewing his show at Hudson Hall this weekend. And you also hear new tracks from Rodney Allen Greenbutt's brand new electronic album from the Catskill artist. At 8 p.m., there's an extra web stream with Los Doggies and Eo and Teton performing at Hilo and Catskill. Tune in for all this special programming all week on 90.7 FM WGXC. With new local music on this week on the air, Modesky Martin and Wood from Woodstock have a new single, Anonymous Skulls, from their Alarm Will Sound record on Indirecto Records. Rodney Allen Greenblatt's album Beep Beep Type Music is out. Liam Singer, who runs Hilo and Catskill, has a new album called Finish Him. The band Soundhouse, which is Matt Harrell with music and words from Edwin Torres, they have a new 7-inch out. Two cassettes released locally lately, one from Jen Cutler called Worth, another from Paolo Yota called Free Genghis. That's from the BuddhaKiba.com label. Also, a new CD released recently, Nima Ashes, Give Me Fire for Your Love, from the People of Planet Earth Records label, is now playing on WGXC 90.7 FM. There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
There are adult Spanish classes, 5:30 p.m. Tuesday, September 11th. Greenville has a zoning board. The Spanish classes are at the Hudson Area Library Tuesday, September 11th. Greenville Zoning Board meets Tuesday, September 11th at 7 p.m. Remember, take out your phone if you're going to a local town meeting. Make a recording and email info@wgxc.org to share it. We can tell you how to share it with your friends and neighbors. Or you can use the WGXC app that's free in the App Store. And make a live web stream of your local town meeting so everyone can hear. We record it automatically and then share it on the WGXC website for everyone and try to get it on the FM radio as much as possible. Wednesday, September 12th, Yola Tengo performs at BSP in Kingston at 8 p.m. Thursday, September 13th, the CoARC Opportunities Golf Tournament is at the Copaic Country Club, annual fundraiser for CoARC programs and services. There's also a vegan program.
Bobby Hart of Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7.
WGXC believes in community. We are a hands-on, participatory radio station and serve many communities. WGXC's volunteer programmers range in age from 9 to 84. And come from all walks of life. What we produce is as varied as the communities that we serve. WGXC is an unbiased source for local news and cultural affairs information. Programming made by and for youth airs daily, and our celebrated music programming is unique, diverse, and eclectic.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
So Bruce, thanks for coming in, and if you could just introduce yourself and mention the fact that we met in the 7th Street Park on Saturday, and just briefly mention what that vigil and gathering is every Saturday.
So when 9/11 happened, after our first reaction, a number of us in Columbia County felt, oh my goodness, this is going to be very divisive. It's going to be something where people are going to be pitted against each other. The government is going to give a very strong, very possible overreaction. And we wanted to know for the community of Hudson and the area around that, what could we do to bring people together? So a group of us met actually in this church, and we talked with Leif Erickson, who was pastor at the time, and we came up with two ideas, both of which have continued from that day, one of which is known as the International Dinner, the Hudson International Dinner, which happens April every year, in which people from different ethnic groups, different cultural groups, different national groups simply bring whatever they want to share in terms of food and entertainment. And this has been going on for years. Bangladeshi community has been very prominent, the Haitian community. And lots of people come and just gather, and we don't talk politics. We don't talk issues. We get together and we socialize and we eat and we watch each other's culture. The other thing that we thought somehow or other people should get together in the park and have some kind of interaction. And eventually what developed was the idea that we would have a vigil, but the vigil was going to be nonpartisan, unpartisan. It wasn't going to have a theme except for the three words, which were peace, justice, and reverence for life. And you could take that to mean whatever you wanted to take it to mean. And we started with maybe 7 or 8 of us. Sometimes we'd be as many as 10. We've been faithful to it. Maybe there's been one or two Saturdays where somebody, too many people were sick or away, or, but snow, rain, heat, we've been there from roughly 2 until 4, and certainly 2 until 3. Sometimes people come by and join us. It's been interesting to watch the difference in reaction over the years. We now have a lot of people wave at us. We used to have people wave at us, sometimes with only a single finger, if you know what I mean. So
I always said, they think we're number one.
That's right, exactly. And we actually like it when people come and say, why are you doing this? I don't know if I agree with you. Have you thought about this? We're not a group trying to make people think a certain way. We're a group saying, let's interact, look at what we have to say, and let's talk about that. So that's always been our theme.
And it just looks like the issues that have been covered in your bearing witness in the 7th Street Park for peace and justice, reverence for life, the issues in specific political, you know, at first it could be said, well, the war on terror, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, especially these wars, are really our main focus of concern. But it seems like, to me, what has happened in the past 17 years since that first vigil is that the issues have conglomerated themselves to sort of be all more encompassing. And we're looking at issues of climate change. We're looking at issues of racial justice, you know, profiling, Black Lives Matter. We're looking at police reform. We're looking at, you know, the possibility of a nuclear strike in some foreign country by some maniacal American president. Who knows? Like, it's like these issues, there's so many issues now. How do you incorporate that, and what are you focusing on in your vigil? You know, you understand what I'm
saying? Yes, I do. In the park, I mean, in our vigil, we are simply open to whatever comes. We have one member who's a Vietnam vet, and so he's a member of Vietnam Veterans for Peace, and he's the one who puts up all these wonderful peace flags, and we have a world flag. It's not that we are against the American flag. It's simply what we're trying to do is be rather universal. We're very pleased about the fact that we have our vigil a very short distance away from the that little prayer symbol that where the it says, may peace prevail on earth in all these different languages, which, by the way, was put up by the Rotary, if I remember correctly. So it's a rather broad focus. Now, what you're talking about with all these struggles and all these worries that people have, I was going to say that when I was a young man, this is back in the late 1960s, I remember going to a party, and there were some people from the YIPI, the Youth International Party, who were, one of them was talking about the fact that they had been to Cuba and that they had met Che Guevara. And they were complaining about, oh, Vietnam's going on, and the country's so, it's dictatorial, and what are we supposed to do? We feel like we're so burdened. And the young man said, well, and then Che said to us, well, you know, you're lucky. You live in the heart of the beast. And that's a lucky thing, not a bad thing. And I'm not saying this as a criticism of our government. I'm saying we live in a place where a lot of stuff is happening. A lot of stuff, a lot of dissension. I won't say it's the most divided the country's ever been, because I grew up in a time when the South, with segregation, was so much worse than anything that's going on in the country now. And they were Democrats. So the Democratic Party was split as badly in some ways as the country is split now, maybe worse. We have very serious things. We have shootings and violence. We don't quite have the level of lynchings that were existing when I was a child and even into my early youth. So it's not that things have gotten better or worse. They're just complicated, and there's a lot of dissension and a lot of difference. And what we've found is that if you look at it the right way, this is a good thing rather than a bad thing. One of my heroes of my youth, and I put this on all my emails, it's my email signature, is I.F. Stone, who was a crusading journalist in the 50s, 60s, into the 70s, I think, I.F. Stone said, the only fight worth fighting is a fight you're going to lose and lose and lose so that someday somebody who believes what you do can win. And I used to think that was kind of a strange thing. I didn't want to be in a fight that I could lose. But, you know, I know people on the left and I know people on the right who believe that in the marrow of their bones. We can, people can complain if they want about the right and, you know, they're against this and against that. But what some of those people did was over 20 years, they worked and worked and worked and worked until finally something happened that they wanted to happen. And some of them may have been people with ill intent, but I know I have a good friend who's a Tea Party guy. He doesn't have ill intent. I may disagree with him on a number of subjects. So what you have is a country where there's striving and striving and striving, and I guess that's what we try to do when we're in the park, and what I try to do in my life is you try to see where the truth leads you, but that doesn't mean you have to have all these enemies. It doesn't mean those people are necessarily enemies. I mean, there are some people that I'm whose actions and opinions I'm strongly opposed to. But it doesn't mean that everybody who doesn't agree with the point of view I happen to have now is an enemy and is wrong. And that's one of the things that I guess in the park and also in some of the other work I do with the climate group that I'm with, that's what we work on, is trying to see, yes, we want to see if we can convince people of things, but we also realize the one way to do that is to, you need to make friends first sometimes. Hmm. When I was a child, it was this story about the sun and the wind have a contest about who's going to get this man to take off his overcoat. And the wind blows and blows and blows and blows and blows, and the man pulls his overcoat tighter. And the sun shines and shines, and the man takes his coat off. And obviously, you know, that's always seemed to me, you don't convince somebody by going and yelling in his face. It is an effective political way to accomplish certain things, but it's not the way to get another human being to agree with you. So it's both. I mean, that's what we need, is both. As I look, you had mentioned earlier about the election campaigns. You know, there's two things going on. One is, I may hope that a certain candidate wins. I may hope very strongly that a certain candidate wins. But without the bipartisanship, without people reaching across, what you have is simply, we'll win, oh, and you'll win next time. And that's, in a way, that's partly what we've seen. I respect and admire President Obama. I think he was is a very fine man, and the time will tell how strong a president he was. But I mean, fine, educated, good thinking, fair, all kinds of adjectives like that. Somebody else comes in, is voted in, and a good part of his legacy starts to disappear because the country is so divided. So it's not as simple as winning. It's, is there a way to forge something that pulls us together at the same time that we need to fight for the things we believe in?
Hey man, you got another hat in your truck? It's sunny out here. Oh no, I gave all my hats away. It seems like they were hurting my brow. Oh darn, can you run in there and get me another cup of coffee, please? Hey man, you just finished your cup of coffee. Yeah, I know, I want one more though. What are those guys talking about? I don't know, he said something about a hat. Oh gosh, I wish I had a hat. Yeah, why don't you run in and get me a coffee, and I'll go get you a hat at the thrift store.
Excuse me.
Oh man, I think those guys are gonna get a thrift score, they said. Oh, they're gonna get all those jazz records over there. Hey, why don't you get me a coffee? Give me extra motivation to go thrifting. Oh, that guy just said he was drifting across the street there at that coffee house. I don't know what to do. Hey, I think that guy said he's drifting. We might have to get out the boats. Oh, I don't know. Hey, I think that guy across the street at the coffee house says he's drifting. Drifting? He looks more like he's grifting. Ha ha, good one. Hey, those two guys across the street at the coffee house said that they're grifting or sifting. I couldn't make it out. Aw, dude, have another coffee. Hey, this is cool. They got brown napkins, so if you spill your coffee, nobody knows. Ha ha ha, good one. Hey, can you get a little more vanilla in my coffee? Yeah, I did get vanilla in your coffee, but they only had raspberry amaretto. Oh, I don't like that stuff. Hey, man, that guy just said he's into amaretto like my little sister. Ha ha ha, yeah, that's a good one. Is your little sister like coffee? Nah, she's only 4. She has to have half a cup. Hey, I think those two guys across the street just made fun of your little sister. Oh, man, after I have all this coffee, I'm gonna go mess them up. Oh, those guys had so much coffee over there. I think they're all messed up, if you know what I mean, in the pants area.
Battlefield Earth, every Tuesday night from 9:30 to midnight.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. David Lombardo is reporting for Capital Confidential. A new Seattle Research Institute poll is projecting that Governor Andrew M. Cuomo will win the September 13th Democratic primary by a wide margin. In the survey released September 10th, Cuomo is leading Cynthia Nixon by 41 points, 63% to 22% among likely primary voters. Cuomo's lead is the largest in Siena's gubernatorial polling this summer, which consistently found Nixon trailing by approximately 30 percentage points. Siena pollster Steve Greenberg said in a statement, and I quote, Cuomo has expanded his 2-to-1 lead in July and now seems poised to overwhelm Nixon in Thursday's Democratic primary, end quote. Greenberg said even an increased turnout among new, young, and more progressive voters would not likely help her. He said, and I quote, Cuomo has a lead of more than 2-to-1, 59-to-28%, with voters under 35 years old, and he has an even larger lead among self-described liberals, 65-to-24%, end quote. However, the Democratic Attorney General primary outcome is up for grabs, according to the same Siena poll, Lombardo writes. A majority of the Democratic primary voters are undecided, according to the poll, and the race is made complicated because none of the candidates are well known by voters. U.S. Representative Sean Patrick Maloney and New York City public advocate Letitia James are leading the pack at 25% and 24%, respectively, but Zephyr Teachout is still in the mix at 18%. Lucia Eve polled at 3%. Greenberg said winning depends on two factors, and I quote, who can bring undecided voters into their column and which campaign does a better job of turning out supporters, end quote. The liberal vote, which accounts for about 51% of the sample, is evenly split between James and Maloney and Teachout. James has a significant lead in New York City, a similar lead with voters under 35 and with Latino voters, and a commanding lead with black voters. Maloney leads Teachout upstate, with James a distant third, and he has a significant lead in the downstate suburbs. Read both stories at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. Amelia Teasdale is reporting in the Columbia paper, the Ichabod Crane School Board moved closer to its final plan for a proposed capital improvement project following a nearly 5-hour special meeting on September 5th. The board is now considering a $25 million project to upgrade the classrooms at the middle school as well as the high school math, science, and technology classrooms. The proposal also includes the construction of a road to connect all 3 school buildings on the campus, storage space in the middle school music room, a sound booth in the high school auditorium, and bleachers on one of the sports fields. Plus, there are several building and infrastructure projects that must be included in the project to be eligible for state aid. Board President Matthew Nelson said, and I quote, the people I've spoken to are in favor of more versus less, end quote. Other board members said they felt the community would support a $25 million capital project. Residents will vote on the plan in December. The state would purportedly pay roughly 73% of the project, making the local share close to $8 million. The board will meet 7 p.m. Tuesday, September 11th, in the high school library to vote on the final cost of the project. Read the full story in the Columbia paper. Laura Italiano is reporting from the New York Post. Last-minute campaign mailings from the New York State Democratic Committee implying that gubernatorial primary candidate Cynthia Nixon is anti-Semitic prompted online expressions of outrage and denial September 8th. Nixon's opponent, Governor Andrew Cuomo, and the state party responded, calling the mailer a, and I quote, mistake, end quote. The mailer, paid for by the state Democrat, stated, and I quote, with anti-Semitism and bigotry on the rise, we can't take a chance with inexperienced Cynthia Nixon, end quote. The mailer also accused Nixon of being against the funding of yeshivas and falsely accused her of being, and I quote, silent on the rise of anti-Semitism, end quote, and supporting the boycott divestment sanctions movement. Cuomo spokeswoman Liz Smith tweeted that the governor, and I quote, didn't approve of or have any knowledge of the mailer, end quote. The committee's executive director, Geoff Berman, later tweeted the mailer is, and I quote, a mistake and is inappropriate, end quote. In a September 9th press release, Nixon, who is raising two Jewish children, said, and I quote, this is an attack not only on my children and my character, but on all New Yorkers. It's sickening at a time when anti-Semitic, Islamophobic, and other hate crimes are on the rise to exploit people's real fears like this, end quote. She then called for Berman to be fired and demanded that new mailers be sent out to correct the record as soon as possible. A copy of Cynthia Nixon's September 9th press release is available on the WGXC website, newsroom.wgxc.org. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, wgxc.org. Next, we have these reports.
Andrew Cuomo got another very favorable poll result against Cynthia Nixon, the primary for governor in the Democratic Party on Thursday, September 13th. So he didn't mention her on his trip to Western New York on September 10th. He talked with the Iron Workers Local 60 in Syracuse, New York on Monday.
Now, I am in a fight with this president, and he attacks me, and I have no problem with that. I'm the most aggressive governor in the United States of America in taking him on. We're suing him on immigration. We're suing him on SALT. Know me by my enemies, all right? And he's a tough guy when he's on Twitter, Mr. President. He's a tough tweeter. That's what he is. He's got strong thumbs, the president. Doing all that tweeting. He must have some. He could beat me in a thumb wrestle, but that is all he could beat me in.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts more rain on Tuesday. 60% chance with cloudy skies and a high near 74. There are scattered showers in the forecast Tuesday night again. Mostly cloudy skies and a low around 61. Wednesday, there's just a 30% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 1 p.m. Otherwise, partly sunny with a high near 74 and a low around 63 Wednesday night. There's a 40% chance of rain on Thursday. Mostly cloudy skies and a high near 76, low around 64. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative community radio.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Art Omai's Light Into Night, an annual benefit auction, 6:30 p.m. Saturday, September 15th at the Studio Barns of Art Omai in Ghent, New York. Featuring a rustic food hall-style meal presented by the Flammery of Kinderhook and Oak Pizzeria Napolitana of Hudson, plus avant-garde happenings and innovative performances by Art Omai alumni and friends. Light Into Night also includes a silent auction throughout the evening, as well as live auctions featuring vacation destinations and monotypes by Art Omai alumni. For children, the Little Stars Party offers art making, a campfire, singing, storytelling, and more. Information at 501auctions.com/artomai or at artomai.org.
Coming up on the WGXC 90.7 FM community program schedule for Tuesday, September 11th, Corey McCasland is back in the satellite studio at the Catskill Public Library at 11 a.m. for the Forgotten Geek, followed by music for the masses with Neva Wartell after the noon news headlines until 2 o'clock. At 2 on Eating It in the Hudson Valley, host Phyllis Segura will be talking with food preparer Susan Ray of Rhinebeck and Hillary Melville, co-founder of Random Harvest, a community market in Craryville. Later on in the evening at 7 o'clock, jazz streams hosted by John D. Thomas until 9:30, followed by Battlefield Earth from 9:30 to midnight.
Tune in live after the Battlefield Earth program, the early morning hours of Wednesday, September 12th. Mr. Doug Doug is live in the WGXC Acre studio with a radio stew from the current artist in resident at Wave Farm. Then the Vital Weekly show has experimental music from Amsterdam at 1 a.m. and the Foxy podcast has experimental music from Minnesota at 2 a.m. overnight on Wave Farm Standing Wave Radio and WGXC.
She's my baby.
The 2018 WGXC Record Fair, coming up at Basilica Hudson September 16th. Early bird admission, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for $10. General admission is free from 10 to 4. Vendors from across the Northeast gather in Basilica's main hall to sell vinyl, CDs, cassettes, tapes, DVDs, books, musical equipment, instruments, and radio-related ephemera, with a variety of affordably priced records in all genres. We'll also be raffling off a regional Record Lovers tour package, with gift certificates to regional record stores and eateries. For more information about the fair, visit our website at wgxc.org/recordfair.
I don't like your peaches, they are full of stones. I like bananas because they have no bones. Don't give me tomatoes, can't stand ice cream cones. I like bananas because they have no bones. No matter.
Nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur, or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening.
listening to WJXC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio. I'm a rock.